A 19th century standoff between a Hawaiian cowboy and an armed force sent to take him and his son to Molokai's leper colony is the stuff of theater for playwright Gary Kubota, whose Legend of Ko'olau is back for a Hawaii performance after a mainland tour. Gary's with us in our studio with some reflections on the way mainland audiences respond to his true life adventure story. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning.
This is, at one level, this is a story of a rebel, and Americans do like their rebels, don't they?
Yes, he was a cowboy outlaw. I don't think he planned on being that, but circumstances forced him into it.
And what were the circumstances?
Well, the circumstance was that he and his son had leprosy and went into Kalalau Valley in the remote section of Kauai, North Kauai, mm-hmm. to live out their days, and a deputy sheriff didn't want that to happen and wanted to force them to go to Kalapapa. And he warned them that if he came in, he'd kill him.
Why did he, you know, since they were off in their own isolation, why did he want to take them out of that?
I think there was a tinge of political ambition in it all. He was married to a missionary woman, descendant, and there was a certain sense of entitlement, and he didn't like the way Ko'olau defied what were at that time leprosy laws.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And what we refer to as authority in this story was actually just right after the overthrow, so kind of questionable authority. Yeah,
yeah, and they were stepping up that particular end of forced migration forced isolation at Kalapapa.
Yeah,
and I think that a lot of the people like Ko'olau, you know, had grown up under the monarchy, and their archival indications that Ko'olau's descendant was actually a guard, an aupuni, during Kaahumanu's time, during the Christianity time.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, he was closely aligned with the monarchy and with Christianity as well.
So there's a political undercurrent to this that, well, I wondered, for example, how mainland audiences, how much understanding they would have brought to that particular aspect of the story.
I found out that they really loved it. We had more than 600 people attending the play in Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still hearing from them through Facebook about their reaction to the play, and they're encouraging a lot of people here to see it. You know, what happened was that we toured Los Angeles, Berkeley, and Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
And more people in California now have seen the play than people in Honolulu.
Well, that's got some irony to it. All the more reason to bring it home, right?
Yes, that's what I'm thinking, too. You know, we had one showing at Hawaii Theater. It was one of the first showings.
And we talked at that time.
Right.
Yeah, but since then, you know, the whole idea of, what's interesting to me is the whole idea of bringing it to audiences that are not familiar with Kalaupapa, the monarchy, the overthrow. They had to be, I mean, California, West Coast audiences had to be a lot less familiar, certainly, than we are.
Yeah, I think there was a sense of empathy and a sense of feeling. A lot of people are minorities or, you know, sons and daughters of grandsons and daughters of immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
There's a sense, you know, of dispossession, sense of bringing out the humanity in the situation,
mm-hmm.
and also the sense of looking at one man standing up for what he believes isn't right.
Yeah. Well, the, you know, American literature, American culture is full of admiration for the lone hero, the rebel, the he who defies authority, right?
And that's correct. And, you know, it wouldn't have been a battle if they just walked away. Because
yeah.
He wasn't really looking for a battle. I mean, he was looking just to stay in Kalalau Valley.
Yeah.
And once they understood that, they left.
So he did live out his days in Kalalau Valley?
He lived out his days, and he died in Kalalau Valley along with his son. And after about 3 years, Pi'ilani, his wife, walked out of the valley and told the story of how they lived in the valley and died. And she lived back, talking about 1912, 1914, she died.
And yet a deputy had been killed in the original standoff, right?
Yeah, so he killed a deputy, and then they actually sent an army to try and capture him.
Yeah.
They declared martial law on Kauai,
yeah.
sections of Kauai. And they brought more than 30 soldiers along with a Krupp cannon on a ship. And then that was in addition to more than 20 deputies. And they stormed up the valley to try and force him out of his cave. He was a crack shot. He was a foreman at one of the ranches, and they just picked on the wrong guy.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's an amazing story, and it's you know, there's so many aspects of it that have a universality, which has to be what you learned touring the show.
Yeah, and I think that I also met actually some descendants of his wife, Pilani, and also of his sister, Naholopapa. And they were familiar with certain aspects that weren't in the history. And they basically told me that the story that I'd written was the most accurate rendition they've seen or heard about, and it was awesome. So they loved the play, and I felt really, really good about that.
In the background of this, the whole idea of being transported to Kalaupapa, which is what they were the armed group was trying to do. Kalaupapa in those days, you can't sugarcoat it. It was a leper colony, right?
Right, and it was a leper colony filled with minorities. You know, there weren't a lot of white people there. The Hawaiians, if you translated what they described, you could translate it to call it the living grave.
Yeah.
And that's what it was at that time.
Weren't a lot of white people there because why?
Well, you know,
they were taken somewhere else. They were given a more privileged.
They were from talking to people. And these are like anecdotes.
Yeah.
If someone, say, a woman had leprosy and she was white, she would be put into a house
up in the attic,
mm-hmm. something like that, and she'd live out her remaining years there very quietly. And that was the same for someone who was.
So race and class privilege played a role in who got sent to.
It did.
Kalaupapa.
It did, unfortunately, and I think that because of that, there was a lack of humanity in it. At one certain point during the monarchy, they allowed kukuas to go to Kalaupapa with the persons who were sick. But during Ko'olau's time, mm-hmm. they had done away with that. And so his wife, who didn't have leprosy, couldn't go with him if they had gone to Kalaupapa Molokai. And that was one of the issues that prevailed in terms of the family sticking together.
At its heart, Gary, it's a human story. And it deserves a much wider viewing, doesn't it? Thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Gary Kubota is the author of The Legend of Ko'olau, which will be performed Saturday, November 19th at 7:30 at the Honolulu Museum of Art's Doris Duke Theater. And you can learn more on our Hawaii Conversation Facebook page. Neka nani au puokalani, neke hai puokalana kila, kui hei.